Many people know Annie Lennox as the voice who has sold over 83 million records, both as a solo artist and as one half of the Eurythmics, along with Dave Stewart. She is an Oscar and Grammy Award-winning artist and a tireless activist. Now at Mass MoCA, she presents Annie Lennox, Now I Let You Go. It's an exhibition comprised of hundreds of artifacts culled from her personal collection of memorabilia, found objects, and personal effects accrued throughout her lifetime and revealed within a large earthen mound. The exhibition, part material diary, part art installation, is accompanied by a printed field guide in which Lennox annotates many of the objects on display, identifying them and adding recollections, personal stories, as well as provenance. Now I Let You Go opens tomorrow at Mass MoCA as part of the museum's 20th anniversary celebration. On Wednesday, I spent a few hours with Annie Lennox. She showed me around the exhibition and told me about some of the underlying and more private forces that motivate her work.
Annie Lennox, what a great pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's wonderful to have anyone be interested enough to come and talk with me because I've got lots to say.
Let us examine for a moment what it is that led you to this. My understanding is you were at Williams College, you received a degree, you met Joe Thompson, and then we're here. Fast forward 5 years, here we are.
Well, I was introduced to Joe through my brother-in-law, Rich Besser, who's Dr. Rich Besser. And Rich said, you've got to go to Mass MoCA. You really do need to go. So we went as a family, and Joe very kindly showed us around. This is about 6 years ago. And I was blown away. I always had this kind of real, I harbored this dream, a kind of yearning in a way, to create something visual in a space like this. I didn't exactly know what it would be, but I knew I could do something. I wanted to do something. I never quite came to the right moment to do it. There's always something else that I was doing. But I just knew I left Mass MoCA feeling like, wow, this is a place where artists can come and create extraordinary things. Last year, I just said, I've got to do it. I've got to contact him and ask him if he would consider, you know, listen to my concept. And so I wrote him an email first and said, hey, it's me. Remember me? Well, I have an idea. Please don't think I'm nuts. But he got back to me right away. And then he said, let's call each other on the phone. And he just got it right away. He understood. And I put the phone down. I was like, it's going to happen. He said, let's do it. Let's do it next year. I think you want to do it quickly. I said, yes, I do. Let's not wait for 4 or 5 years. Let's do it now. So he said, okay, 2019, May 25th, we have our opening. Let's do this thing. And that was it. We were on.
An elevator ride from the lobby to the third floor opens to a room with a written introduction to the right and eerily familiar music emanating from above.
Just imagine you just come out of the elevator. Do you know what you're listening to? You can recognize it.
It sounds like Sweet Dreams backwards.
Correct. You right answer. So this is Sweet Dreams playing backwards, folks.
And it's still beautiful.
It's very strange, but it's identifiable, I think, from the synthesizer sound of the introduction, you know, that goes all the way through.
So then there's a room, and it is filled with gold, gold and platinum, a disco ball floor, and this is your very public face, I assume.
Well, it's strange because these are all, like you said, like gold discs and platinum discs. And these are trophies. These are awards. And some people hang them in their homes, I guess. And some people put them in storage. And they've been in storage for a very long time. But it's kind of lovely to see them here at Mass MoCA. And they're emblems. They're representations of a life of, in the public, I guess, of music making and the life that Dave and I created musically and also my own solo work. And it's kind of contained within a sort of jeweled box. And they represent things. I mean, they represent achievements and hurdles and goals. And here they are.
So then we go into the next room, and this is where we will we will find the what I have heard termed as a mound. Is that how you would describe it?
Well, if you saw this for the first time, would you not say that it was a mound? What would you say it was?
Yes, a mound or a mountain of something, yes.
It's earth, actually. It's a mound of earth. So it's like, this is the this is part of the planet that we live on, taken into a room, into a space, a human space. And I think when you see it like that, inside the room with a grand piano on the top of it, again, it's like, oh, this is earth. What's it doing here? Kind of makes you think a little bit. I think all of this is about giving people an opportunity to reflect. And you can reflect on anything you like.
Then in that earth and in the mound are many, many objects, 200 plus objects that tell us a story along the way.
They do, yeah, they are. They're metaphorical and there is a narrative in it. And they're extremely personal to me. And I know what they mean to me. But I also think people can interpret and identify with things in their own way. It's like music. When you listen to a piece of music, you listen to it in your way. You know, nobody else listens to it like you do. And maybe even the person that wrote it listened to it and created it with a very different music in mind than the one that you're hearing, if that makes any sense to you.
It does indeed.
Do you see the Polaroid camera up there? Can you see it?
Yes. Yes. And it's I mean, of the era, right? Of let's say 80s, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of 80s things in here. And I can't even remember what that's called, but it's like an early version of something.
Early iPod, I guess.
Yeah, early iPod. There it is. And it's like if you were coming to an archaeological dig and you like were looking like, who were these people?
Who were these 80s people? You
know, I really ought to have been an archaeologist. I mean, I would have loved to be digging in the earth and finding things. So I've had to make my own earthen mound and put my own things in it.
But I think of you somewhat as an archaeologist in just finding the objects that went here, of going through your various collections to find what you wanted to place.
Yeah, it's true. It's a personal archaeology. It is one of the things about this installation. It truly is a personal archaeology.
And also an excavation, because there are things that are half covered and uncovered.
Yeah. Some things are concealed and some things are revealed. And the other thing about this is that when I was creating it, I realized this is a dreamscape. You know, like when you're sleeping and you have a very vivid dream, things are happening to you in the dream that when you wake up, you say, oh my God, what, you know, you'd never believe what happened in my dream last night. So if people come here and they think, wow, this is actually as if I'm walking through a dream, but it's someone else's dream. So sweet dreams are made of this. It's the mound, it's the earth and mound version of the song, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
And as you look at this, you also have control of what is revealed and what is concealed.
Correct. Yes.
Which you don't always have in real life.
But the funny thing is that we're only partially glimpsed. You know, you cannot reveal everything about yourself. You don't even know who you are yourself or what you are. It's like, it's not really like that. You know, you get to know someone maybe over years and then something happened and you thought, did I really know that person? Like, who are they? And we are just all walking through the passage of time. You know, in our lives, and this is part. This is another theme of the mound is the temporary nature of existence. Like, we're not all here forever. We're only here for a very short time. We don't know how long, and some people, you know, we all have different sorts of lives. One life is completely different to another one.
And these are the things that.
These are the things sweet dreams are made of. This.
We leave these behind. This
yeah.
behind.
Are my partly these are objects that I have interacted with and have been part of my life, and it's the stuff of life and in my life in particular. But I could make all sorts of statements, you know, about my life, but this is this part that we're standing in here is that, like, the musical aspect of it. So that this is the musicals. You can see around it there are lots of cables. I discovered that I kept loads and loads of cables and electrical plugs, and they look so incidental, but they're actually crucial to whatever I've done as a recording artist, because without the plugs and the cables, there would be no recorded sound. There would have been no cassettes, no vinyl, no DVD, no download, nothing, no recording. So this is something that is very essential.
It's also interesting, too, that we see the iPod that looks very old, the Polaroid that looks very old, but a microphone looks like a microphone. It looked like it did in the 80s as it does now.
It hasn't changed much, yeah. That's really good, because actually, from a technical point of view, some people will come here and they'll go, oh, I remember that TIAC tape recorder. This is up very near to the piano at the top of the mound. Those were highly prized at the time. I mean, if you got a tape recorder like that, you thought that was the business. It's a double cassette player, and that was very cutting edge at the time.
I love the cables because they are toward the bottom and I guess in somewhere where they normally are.
Yes, they're the roots.
Did you always vision the piano being at the very top?
The piano at the top of the mound was always... That was the first thing. There had to be a piano at the top. This one is a baby grand, which is what I use, and this is one of my pianos.
And why that at the top?
Piano is so significant to me because when I was 7 years old, I started piano lessons with my teacher. And without those piano lessons, I wouldn't have learned how to play. I wouldn't have learned how to read music and subsequently to write music and subsequently to compose songs. And songs and music have been the theme of most of my life. So it's a significant part. It's at the top. It really represents how an aspiration. She told me, my piano teacher was an elderly lady at the time, that I had great promise, but if I didn't practice, I wouldn't amount to anything. And I didn't even know what she really meant. And I went to the Royal Academy of Music, actually, and, you know, it wasn't an easy thing. It was something that was very unusual for a provincial girl. And I knew from the first day that I wasn't going to follow it through. And that was really scary because I didn't know what I was going to do. I was in that moment for about 3 years, actually, until I understood that, I want to sing and I want to write music and I want to record music and I want to perform. That's who I am. That's what I want to do. And I knew that before I met Dave. And I was trying to do that when I met him. And when we met, it was just like a very, very key moment because it catalyzed that desire in me. Like, he got it. He knew. And we started from then on. This has to do with Nelson Mandela, 46664, his HIV/AIDS Foundation. And I had such a life-changing moment when I performed for 46664 at the launch of the foundation, the concert in Cape Town in South Africa. And it started me on this journey of activism and advocacy for women and children affected by living with HIV. And these are some African mama dolls. They're carrying the babies on their backs. And another African statue feeding the babies, like, wow, this is the Earth Mother. And how I believe that every baby has the right to be born into health, into a healthy environment. And there are millions of babies born with HIV, and there's no need for that in this day and age. So we can do something about that. And that's part of what my advocacy was all about.
And we see the shift in the mound of going from that to the advocacy of becoming less and less about music.
Music. And that's the narrative starts to happen. I put these in the mound thinking, okay, this is the space where HIV must be. I had the T-shirt from 46664, Mandela's beautiful face and his smile there. And there are skulls again. They come because they're glass goblets and skeletal form that I found in Brazil. and they just seemed so appropriate. I just kind of used the objects as material to tell a narrative, to tell a story. I mean, I've got Tibetan prayer flags in there. Well, that was pretty synchronistic, wasn't it?
Annie Lennox's exhibition, Now I Let You Go, opens tomorrow at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts. Learn more at massmoca.org.
Is that a picture of your mother?
Yes, that's my mom. I think she was about 18 when that picture was taken. And she had kind of film star looks, I think. She had a quite a hard life. You know, it's like people did. Working class, I wish my mother would have had an easier life as I wish my father would have had, and my grandparents. And we have her sewing machine there. And there's my father's practice chanters, because he played the pipes. And there's a medal that he was given just there, just beside the chanter. I'm not really very sure what the medal was given to him for. I'm not clear about that, but it kind of touches me that he was given a medal. Because, again, my parents had a very hard life. And he said, this is very painful for me, that he never had a youth. And everything about my generation was about youth, you know, the 60s and the 70s. People just said, oh, of course, we have a youth. We're going to rebel against all this. Well, we didn't have to go through the First World War or the Second World War. We didn't have that. We just had youth and rebellion, which is great because we were anti-establishment. And I still am anti-establishment in a funny sort of way.
Isn't it hard? Both my parents are gone, and it's so hard to go through their belongings because there's so many questions that you want to ask because you don't know the full story. And what's even more painful is sometimes you know you were told the story, but you don't remember.
Well, that's true. And I think this is the thing about memory. It is the one thing that we carry in our consciousness or our minds that is like, you know, if you have memory, you can't bring it back, but it is there. You carry it with you. And I find that so extraordinary about human beings that we have millions of countless experiences as we get older, and sometimes the memories do fade, but that the objects that are left behind are so potent with these connective memories and stories about the people's lives. And this is part, again, what this mound for me is about. It's a way of connecting with the past.
I see a piggy bank.
Well, this is money. Money is, well, it's all manner of things. Some would say it's the root of all evil, but it does transform people's lives in so many ways. People suffer because of lack of it, and they also suffer from too much of it, perhaps, you know, how it can distort people's values in a way. So I've put the piggy bank that contains the money, the sort of innocent children's piggy bank. It's quite close to another cast of my mouth, that's where I've sung, you know. Like, my mouth is part of the reason why I had any money, because I never had any money. So I've put some coins in my mouth and around it, because I created money from singing. As it happens, I did manage to make some money, but it was not the reason why I was singing.
You needed to sing.
I always did. I just did. I love to sing, you know, and I had never, there's never any guarantee that I would be able to become a creative artist ever. And it's such a rarefied thing. And it's walking a tightrope, really, because as I said, there are no guarantees. You take huge risks. If you're lucky, maybe something might happen where you get on more solid ground.
There's almost a shift here, because we go into almost another mound, and the thing that brings us to it is cassette tape strewn.
Yeah. Well, these cassettes are quite different from the other cassettes that I had earlier in the mound, because I became a parent and I discovered this set of like parenting skills tapes, because I thought, I don't have parenting skills. I must learn how to be a better parent. So these are the tapes that I had. And what I did was I just pulled out the actual fabric of the tapes themselves, they've sort of turned into a message stream that I wanted to help to imbibe into my children. So you can see how the inner workings of the tapes are mixed up with my children's shoes. I'm sort of sending them messages of good parenting.
My mother, I know, saved a lot of my shoes. You seem, by the looks of this, it seems like you saved all of your children's shoes.
Pretty much as they were growing up into being young teenagers, just about every pair of shoes I could not let them go. This is partly what the exhibition is about, or the installation, if you like. It's quite a feature, as you can see. But it's like the biggest shoes actually start over there, and they get smaller as we walk around the mound. And it's as if I want time to go backwards. I really cherished my babies, you know, my children. When they were babies, they had the tiny feet. All parents know this. You hold your children's feet in the palm of your hands, and you just love them so much. And as they grow, you know, they outgrow the previous pair of shoes. It all changes. So it delineates the steps they've taken, the experiences they've lived through the shoes. And I always knew I had to do something with these shoes. I would say that maybe these shoes, most of all, of anything that's here, are the reason why this installation exists.
And then on the wall is this... There is a projection that is on a loop, and it is many things, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a series of videos, and they are on a loop, and they are at quarter speed running backwards. So it's really a memory. It's a living memory for me.
And again, going back to where we started of in reverse.
In reverse, because the one thing you can't do is make time go backwards. You can kind of get us pretty close to it by doing this.
I just thought of this because we've been walking through the exhibit, but for you in the creation of this, there must just be something very satisfying and primal about playing in the dirt.
Absolutely. It's really funny that you say that, but I spent 10 days with the team creating this, and I have to say now that, you know, without the team of Mass Mocha, this would not be happening. The technicians here are at the highest level, and they could not have been more encouraging and helpful and really, really wanted to make my concept in my mind, that wanted to really manifest it for me and with me. And when I sit here and look at it now, it couldn't be more perfect.
Annie Lennox, I can't thank you enough for spending time and sharing this beautiful exhibit and collection with us.
Thank you. I'm so touched, and really thank you for coming to it. I just feel it's a privilege to be here at Mass Mocha in Massachusetts, North Adams. I love the museum. I love the place. I just, it's an honor to have finally been able to realize this.
Feels right to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Annie Lennox's Now I Let You Go opens tomorrow at Mass Mocha as the museum celebrates their 20th anniversary with a block party beginning at 5 p.m. You can find out more at massmocha.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.